It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The transit of Mercury, a rare planetary event, is happening on Monday. But this is not the only big celestial news. For the first time, researchers have discovered three potentially inhabitable Earth-like planets orbiting an ultra-cool red dwarf star 40 light years away in another star system. Joining us to explain the scientific significance of all of this is Point Park University professor and astrophysicist Brendan Mullen. Brendan, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul.
You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh at wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Brendan Mullen, let's begin by talking about the three potentially inhabitable Earth-like planets out there in another star system. Where is this system, and how did researchers discover them?
Well, all right, big question here. Let's unpack it for a second.
Okay.
So this star, TRAPPIST-1, why it has its name is a Belgian inside joke. It's about 40 light years from Earth.
It's a Belgian inside
joke?
You're going to explain that at some point?
Sure, yeah. As an astronomer, my field is all about crazy creative acronyms one way or another. And this was a Belgian team of astronomers who went out and observed the star, which normally has some boring catalog designation that nobody cares about. But since they used a telescope called TRAPPIST, which, if I recall correctly, stands for Transiting Planets and Planetesimal Small Telescope, I know it's a bit of a stretch, they called the star that they were observing TRAPPIST-1, as in the first one that they were looking at when they made this discovery. So TRAPPIST being one of my favorite types of beer out there, I'm inclined to give them that much.
Okay.
So this star, this ultra-cool dwarf star.
And let's explain ultra-cool, because people might think that we're using that as an adjective of, you know, that this is just a really cool thing, but that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
So explain ultra-cool.
Astrophysically, it's not just like the fawns of the stars out there in the night sky. This is actually towards the far end of the temperature spectrum in terms of how cool a star can be and still be a star. These cool, dim red stars called red dwarf stars are very common in the universe. In our local neighborhood, they outnumber regular stars by a large margin. So they're very, very common out there. This one just happens to be towards the very far end of how small and cool these stars tend to be.
Okay. And so there are three Earth-like planets that are orbiting this dwarf star. Describe what these planets are. Are they, I guess they're the same size as Earth?
Yeah, as best as we can tell so far, they're about the same size as Earth, plus or minus 10% or so. So it's the same radius as Earth. We don't have good measurements of mass yet to determine composition and density and gravity, but it's reasonable to suspect they're about the same mass of the Earth as well. And they orbit close enough to this very cool small star such that they may have sufficiently Earth-like conditions to possibly support liquid water and life itself.
Okay, so the similarities, the other similarities to Earth besides the size would be what? You mentioned water would be available, which obviously would be necessary to sustain human life.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there?
Well, I mean, in terms of water, we don't know that yet because we don't have a good sense of the composition. And
it may be there.
Yeah, some people are thinking now when you start to throw in environmental and climate evolution to the mix, these planets could be a bit dry, but there could be still some water there in some way. But they're Earth-like in terms of their size. That's what we know for sure right now. You know, it's going to depend on what your definition of Earth-like is. But until we get those measurements of composition, that's the best we got so far.
So we don't know yet if, for example, there are, you know, trees or oceans or deserts.
Probably deserts. But again, I'm personally not being attached to this research. I'm speculating right now. However, the exciting thing is that the first two planets may be a little bit too close for more advanced forms of life, or, you know, even relatively simple forms of life for that matter. But the third one, it looks like it's far enough away. It's in that sweet spot, that habitable zone, where there could be just the right mix of temperatures and conditions for life itself.
Ooh, now we're getting, now it's getting interesting. Now, and what kind of life are we talking about? Are we talking about human beings, some alien life form? I know that this is probably something you can only speculate on, but I'm guessing you might have some idea.
Oh, sure. I mean, I have no shortage of fun speculative ideas about this. The cool thing about these planets is that they orbit so close into their star, they have to because that star is so small, that they are tidally locked to that star, which means they show the same planet face to that star as they go around it, much like how the moon shows the same face to us as it goes around us. So that means for the two closest planets, those surfaces that continually face towards their star are very hot, and the far sides are very cold.
So they don't rotate?
They rotate at the same rate as they go around the star.
I see, okay.
Yeah. So they always show the same face. And if these worlds have atmospheres, that sets up a very fierce wind system where the energy of that star is exciting strong winds that go from close side of the planet to the far side and back again. So imagine a world in which the sun never rises and sets. There's always a region towards the perpetual sunlight, the perpetual dawn to dusk transition region where you'll always see the sun on the horizon and there'll be fierce winds whipping around north to south all the time. So this is the kind of condition we're talking about here. The third one, I mean, if you want to take a pop cultural perspective on it, Man of Steel comes to mind with planet Krypton having that giant red star in the background there. Not having seen the movie, that's the best I got to go on right now. But ultimately, we're looking at a situation where these Krypton-like star systems are, you know, surprisingly common.
So how much does this add to the conversation about whether there is other life out there? Does this really change that conversation? Does this, you know, if these planets are out there, might there be others? And if there are others, mathematically or exponentially, how much does that increase the chances or the opportunities of finding other life in the universe, which man has speculated about since man has been here?
Well, honestly, to me, this doesn't change a whole lot. I've been hearing about all these discoveries of new possibly habitable planets for well over a decade now. We've got over 2,000 confirmed exoplanets from the Kepler Space Telescope. What this discovery is you have planets around a certain type of star that's actually very easy to observe in terms of disentangling the type of light that you get from the planet itself away from the star itself. So for us as astronomers, it's easier to make measurements of what could be going on in the planet's atmospheres and thereby figure out whether there's some sort of life through this indirect approach. So for us, it's kind of like, all right, our jobs are a little bit easier for the first time in like ever. In terms of the cosmic perspective, for me, this just goes to show that life could be common in the universe, and frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if we have some sort of confirmation of that within my lifetime.
And is there a possibility at some point that, probably not in either your or my lifetime, but that mankind or some other, if mankind or some other force destroys the Earth, that we humans, assuming the technology is available in the future, would be able to escape to these other planets if, in fact, they support life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit too soon to think about it in terms of that. Because right now we've got a lot of good candidates, these included, that have the right size, perhaps the right mass. We don't know anything about what they're made of yet. And it's reasonable to assume that they're made of the very similar things that we're made of here. But in terms of very specific predictions of temperatures, of whether or not there's water, it's a little bit too soon to make that judgment. And personally, I'm not looking to go into a rocket ship if I don't know exactly what's going to be on the other side of the galaxy.
Yeah, that could be a little scary, a little science fiction-y, but fun to think about nonetheless. We're talking with Point Park University professor and astrophysicist Brendan Mullen, and we've been talking about the discovery of the Earth-like planets orbiting the ultra-cool red dwarf star 40 light years away in another star system. Meanwhile, in our own solar system, there is a unique event that is happening on Monday. Mercury, the closest planet to the sun, will transit the sun. Explain what is happening here and the significance of this.
Sure. Well, it's kind of like a mini eclipse. Normally, when we think eclipse, we think of the moon passing in front of the sun relative to our line of sight. In this case, it's not something going around us passing between us and the sun. It's something going around the sun passing between us and the sun. It's the planet Mercury itself.
The closest one to the sun.
Right, the closest planet to the sun. And Mercury, its orbit is inclined relative to ours by an angle about 7 degrees or so, which is not much. Generally speaking, all the planets orbit in the same plane of the solar system, you know, give or take a couple of degrees here and there. But it's just enough to not have that eclipse line up every time Mercury goes around the sun and plants itself in front of us, relatively speaking. So you have to wait every 10, 13 years or so. It varies a little bit. Roughly, there's 13 or so every century, these transit events. So if you find yourself with nothing to do on Monday morning and you've got a decent telescope that will magnify the sun pretty well, and the most important part here, you've got a good solar filter because you don't want to be looking at the sun directly at all. Definitely
yes,
not.
Right. Yeah. Go blind doing that. You don't want that.
So a little bit after 7 o'clock, say 7:13 or so, I think, for the Pittsburgh region, you'll start to see Mercury start to find itself going across the sun's disk relative to our line of sight.
You know, you brought up something, Brendan, that's interesting, in that I guess we all assumed that all of the planets in our solar system all – I guess it's 8 now because Pluto's not a planet anymore.
Yeah, well, plus or minus the one we talked about last time.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. Exactly. So, all right. But I guess we all assume that they're all on the same plane. But
they are. It's a very slight difference. I mean, it's 7 degrees is not all that much.
Okay, but it's not exact.
Yeah, it's not exact. So it's just that small difference makes all the difference, I guess you could say.
Sure. And you explained how rare this is and also what we can see from Earth. So in the last 45 seconds to a minute that we have left, you said you need a telescope in order to see the transit, to watch it. But in order to protect your eyes specifically, what do people need to do? Obviously not stare into the sun, but how do you do it without, how do you look at it without hurting your eyes?
Well, you need something that's going to block out almost all of the sun's light.
So like something with a little piece of cardboard, maybe with a pinhole in it?
Normally, I would say yes, but because Mercury is so small compared to the rest of the sun, you're probably not going to see it just with that method alone. You'll need something that's going to magnify the part of the sun that it's going across. So I would strongly recommend getting yourself a good either hydrogen alpha filter or a general solar filter that will... you can affix very firmly to the aperture of your telescope so you don't burn out your eyeballs.
Okay, so you have 3 days to do that because it's happening Monday, the transit of Mercury taking place on Monday, which is May 9th. We've been talking with astrophysicist and Point Park University Professor Brendan Mullen. Brendan, as always, you've been so fascinating to visit with, and we appreciate all the information about these celestial activities.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's been fun.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Until Monday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer saying have a great weekend, everybody.